Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Debbie Guy Giesch of the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to Revenue Marketer Radio. Every week, we meet to talk to really interesting revenue marketers. These are marketers that are making a real difference and making a big impact on revenue in their organizations. And it's more than just listening. This is an interactive show, so please feel free to call in or to chat, and we'd be happy to include you in the dialogue. You know, I have to tell everybody that we've been doing this radio show, I guess, for close to 3 years now, and we transitioned the name to Revenue Marketer Radio very, very early. And at the time, the term revenue marketer was not very well known, wasn't well understood. And so I would always have to explain at the beginning of every show exactly what revenue marketing is. And it actually was a term that was created initially by the Pedowitz Group, and we've even trademarked the term. But I have to tell you, I think the term has arrived because I recently did an interview with One-to-One Magazine, and they called up saying, you know, we're doing a story on trends in revenue marketing. Would you like to contribute? And we just laughed and we said, of course, we would love to contribute. So I don't think I have to explain the term revenue marketing anymore. We all know that these are marketers who are responsible and accountable for making a real revenue impact in their organization. So let's get on to the show and let's get on to probably the most phenomenal guest I have ever had. Everyone, I'm so pleased to let you know that Laura Ramos of Xerox, formerly of Forrester, is our guest today. And let me give a quick bio of Laura. It makes me tired just reading the bio. And then we'll find out more about her thoughts on marketing automation and revenue marketing in the enterprise organization. So currently, Laura heads up enterprise industry marketing at Xerox, where she develops marketing strategy, also implements programs for the specific industries that are really best served by the broad portfolio of Xerox technology and services. Now, she's recently come to corporate at Xerox after 2 years in the field of running industry marketing for the U.S. region. Prior to Xerox, Laura led the B2B marketing research practice as a vice president at Forrester. She was my favorite analyst. And before Forrester, she has 20 years of experience in the design and marketing of technology in California's Silicon Valley, which is where she still is today. She's been given all kinds of honors. Laura has been named Who's Who on the list for 4 years in a row from B2B Magazine, most recently in 2010. And in 2011, B2B honored her on their list of top 25 digital marketers. She also authors a delightful blog called B2B Marketing Post, and you can follow her at Laura Ramos on Twitter. She holds an MBA from, oh my gosh, I hope I pronounced this right, Levy School of Business. Did I get it right, Laura?
You absolutely did.
Oh, great. And Santa Clara, I know that was a hard place to go to school. And we were just chatting before the show. She also holds a BS in Mechanical Engineering from Stanford University. And here's a quick note about Laura. When her graduating class had a little over 500 people in it, only 2 people were women. So she's something of a groundbreaker, that's for sure. So, Laura, welcome to the show.
Well, Debbie, thank you so much for having me. I can't say how thrilled I am to be joining you today on the show. This is going to be a lot of fun. I look forward to it.
This is going to be a lot of fun. So kind of in your bio, I did share with our listeners a little bit around, you know, what you're currently doing at Xerox, but maybe you could elaborate on that just a little bit for us.
Well, I would say that the majority of time that I've been here at Xerox has really been focused on industry marketing. And industry marketing from a field marketer's perspective. The corporate job is new as of only a month ago. So I want to focus more on what I did before, which is, you know, look at how can we create demand for new customers and amongst our existing customers for Xerox services and use an industry envelope or industry lens for doing that. Now, I wish I could say that we were, you know, very highly targeted on specific industries, and we had products and services that fit those particular industries. But I think we're in sort of a early stage of the journey in this particular area, and really looking to demonstrate that if you talk to customers in the language of the industry where they exist, and in the terms of the problems that they're seeing, you can have you can be more relevant and create that connection with them, which would then allow them to be interested in what it is that you have to offer and hopefully eventually take a sales call.
So that's, yeah, Laura, that's,
I was just going to say,
I completely agree about the industry approach. Last year, I had the pleasure of doing a roadshow with Jim Linscold of the Linscold Group and 14 cities, and Jim showed the same slide every time. He said, if you want to make the biggest impact on marketing ROI, the place you start is with segmentation by industry. So having those relevant pain points and having those relevant, you know, here's what it means to you and your industry is absolutely, a, you know, just a great way to go. So I'm sure that that was an interesting role for you, and I definitely want to talk about more about the lessons learned that you can share with all of our listeners. But why don't we start by telling us a little bit about the revenue marketing journey at Xerox. Just kind of start at the beginning and talk about those initial problems you were trying to solve and just kind of give us a baseline for our discussion.
Yeah, you know, Debbie, I think there's an old Chinese proverb that says that a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. And yesterday I was at the marketing operations community collaboration association meeting, MOCA, as many of you may know it, and I would have to say, compared to some of the other stories that folks were telling, Xerox is probably on the 258th step of those millions of steps that you need in a thousand journey, you know, 1,000 mile journey. But I think we made a lot of progress rather rapidly, particularly last year, in our you know revenue marketing journey. The initial problem, I think, is pretty simple. We had a new group. One thing we do at Xerox a lot is reorganize. We had a new group of sales managers who were focused on net new logo development. So some of them had been at Xerox for a while and transitioned into this new group. And to grow the business, we really decided that expanding new business was a necessary step in 2011. So the group had formerly been like in the neighborhood of 30 salespeople, and we took that up to like 70 or 80. So with those 50 people or so joining the team, we really had to look at how can we create pipeline, you know, pipeline opportunity for them really quickly. So that was one of the business problems, but that's, I think, the main one that I kind of want to focus on for the revenue marketing journey.
And I would say, Laura, that it's pretty interesting to me when we talk to big organizations, small organizations, mid-sized organizations. This is typically the initiative that helps people want to begin that journey. There's something that has to happen around. We have to grow the pipeline. We have to put high-quality leads into the top of the funnel.
Right.
And the only reason I bring that up is because, there's been a lot of talk recently about what's different between when marketing automation gets implemented in a small company versus mm-hmm. when marketing automation gets implemented at a big company. You know, what are those, you know, kind of what those differences are. So I'm glad to hear that at a big company like Xerox, it's really, we're trying to solve the same problem. We've got to fill the pipeline, and we've got to make these salespeople successful. So I think that's very, very interesting.
Right. I think the other thing that was interesting about this is that we didn't take sort of a very ambitious approach. I would say that we were conservative in our goals initially and quite happy with the results that we achieved. We didn't go out and invest in, you know, a lot of technology, which I know, you know, we were talking about the title of this is, you know, how do you adopt technology to help run, generate revenue in an enterprise organization. And actually, Debbie, I think that technology is really sort of the last step in the process. The first step in the process is to really understand what are your objectives, what are you trying to do, which, you know, we just talked about, and who are you trying to reach? And I think that's where sort of the industry focus came in. In many new business development groups, these groups tend to be geographically organized. And sales managers in these groups can end up having many different clients in different industries that they're trying to create relationships with and tell the Xerox services story so we can, you know, begin to explain to them how we can help take cost out of their business and streamline business processes for them, all related, you know, in and around the use of documents in business. In looking at it in this particular way, though, we said, look, you know, we can go in with sort of the old cost-cutting story and the efficiency story, but why don't we take an approach where we talk about industry-specific problems and then show how we can, by helping them outsource certain services or take certain services and streamline them, give them more opportunity, give these companies more opportunity to, you know, basically do more with their money.
So tell me about how you guys kind of developed that approach. And
well,
I think this is absolutely fascinating.
This was the interesting part is, you know, this was not, well, okay, let's design some campaigns and go buy some lists and figure out what the flow is and how we're going to nurture them. This was, I would say, more led by the sales organization or the sales operations side of this particular organization in conjunction with marketing. And marketing was the industry marketing folks who report to me at the time and my counterpart who is in business analytics, segmentation, and account profiling, really sort of the marketing operations side of the house. So these three parties, so to speak, got together, and sales said, help us generate some demand. And the basic approach really leaned heavily on having the new sales managers involved in the process. So the kind of campaign that we designed is not what I would call nurturing. It was definitely just, you know, straight demand generation. But it included multiple touches that were very basic, starting out and progressed, and then allowed for the whole opportunity was to get the salesperson to have an opportunity to talk with the client about something of interest that came up in the course of the campaign. So, you know, very simply, we ran two of these types of campaigns in 2011. The basic steps were that we started out with some very careful segmentation, analysis of our existing customers to understand what other types of customers would fit the profile in some specific industries, and then go after those. And that the industries that we chose were basically around retail banking, higher education, manufacturing, some insurance companies, and some state and local government.
I think one of the points that you made here, I want to make sure that everyone fully understands this, and that's the part when you said you began developing these campaigns first with very careful segmentation by going out and taking a look and profiling existing customers.
Correct.
I see day in and day out marketers not taking the time to do that.
Yeah, no, and it was really key to us because we can't have, well, it's difficult when you have your salespeople spending time on accounts that really aren't qualified or don't even have sort of the potential to be qualified for the types of services contracts that we sell. Debbie, we aren't selling something that you can buy off a website using your credit card. It's a long consideration sales cycle, and basically what we're trying to do is go into a customer, do an assessment with them, make sure that they're of the significant size and have the types of business problems that if Xerox were to come in and take over some portion of their business, and really that's what we're asking to do, their permission to do, that we can demonstrate to them that, well, not only can we save them, you know, 15 to 30% over their existing cost, but we can do this in a way that will also make money for us.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's, you know, that's not every company is in a position, right, to be able to afford a multi-million dollar, you know, 3 to 7 year contract with a partner like Xerox to do that.
Okay. So I love the fact, but I want to back up one step further.
Sure.
And that is the fact that instead of inundating people with a bunch of emails that were long, what you did was you really did your whole campaign based on industry-specific problems.
Yes.
That you were providing thought leadership. And all you were trying to do was just set up a discovery session, a substantive conversation between the prospect and Xerox if it got interesting. You weren't trying to, like, you know, oversell. You weren't, like, you know, acting like used car salespeople, but you were just using these soft, industry-leading touches to get involved, to create a relationship, and then to get that first appointment for the salesperson.
Yes. And
I love
so
that approach.
Tactically, what we decided to do is after we kind of analyzed what do our existing customers look like, what's where are the industries and where are the areas where we have some good density in terms of opportunity. Then we also then worked again with sales operations to understand, okay, where is the overlap between the coverage that the salespeople have in terms of their regions or where they're focused in terms of specific industries, on how we would then create this list, this marriage of between where is there the opportunity, and where do we have people who we know can go pursue that opportunity because it's in their coverage and territory. So that was a process of, you know, of working between marketing operations, that providing data to sales operations, and sales operations understanding, well, who the new reps were, what their coverage looked like, and how many of them needed, you know, X amount of opportunity in their pipeline.
What was that experience like, Laura?
It was very labor-intensive, back and forth. We did manage to do it in a very short period of time. But it was basically a lot of looking in our database, looking at what we could get in terms of account and contact information, marrying that all together, walking through it and saying, okay, this looks good, this doesn't. We need more over here, we need less over here, and coming up with a well-balanced portfolio of target accounts that we wanted to go after.
So let me ask you a different question because, again, I just have so many questions. Every time you bring something up, you just have these pearls of wisdom in each of these. I want to make sure that we can share with everybody. So the question I have is, you know, you don't typically find marketing ops, sales ops working together nicely. Why were you guys working so well together in this situation?
I think we just had a really common vested goal, which was to generate pipeline and build business rapidly for this one particular group, this business development group that Xerox Services as a whole decided to invest in, and, you know, we needed to bring them up to speed. And the marketing side of the house, industry marketing on sort of the demand generation side and marketing operations on sort of understanding the customer side, we just knew that the fastest, best way to do this was to, you know, put together a program that had to have information that would be specific to the customers and give not only the customers something to kind of look at and say, oh, I didn't know Xerox did that, but give the salespeople the opportunity to follow up with them and say, did you know we did this, and could I tell you some more?
So, again, a very, very soft touch. You said that you did two campaigns in 2011, so you want to tell us about the structure of those campaigns and the results?
Yeah, we did two, and they had almost identical structure. They were one was like sort of over the summer, and the other was like over the fall. The basic structure was once we figured out which accounts we wanted to target using the process that I just told you about. In both cases, we ended up with, I'm just going to use rough numbers here, roughly, you know, 400 to 500 accounts that we targeted. So then we got all the contact information. And within those accounts, there could be anywhere from 1 to 5 people that we wanted to target. So again, it wasn't just which accounts, but which titles and roles specifically within those accounts. Again, based on understanding our own customers' purchase behavior and propensity to buy.
Mm-hmm.
So the campaigns themselves kind of ran for about a 3-week period, and they kicked off. I mean, this is very simple. This is not like, you know, exceptional revenue marketing rocket science. This is basic stuff. But my point is, you'll see once I get to the end of the story, is it was rather effective. We started out with letters, physical letters, that came from a specific executive inside of the business development organization, but someone who was high enough in the organization that he would be a recognized, you know, focused executive here at Xerox. And each letter was then customized to the different industries that I mentioned in a very simple way. The first paragraph started out talking about the kinds of issues that people in that industry would face around communicating to the people they want to reach. So in banking, it was focused around like new clients, new client acquisition, and the whole new client, getting to know your new client and the new client sign-on process. In higher education, it was around communicating to students or to alumni and donors in the giving population. So with each one of the different industries, there was a different focus in terms of, you know, these are the people you want to communicate with. Here are the kinds of problems that you're facing. We can come in and help make those processes smoother for you as it relates to the documents that you use for communicating with them. So very simple opening paragraph talking about the kinds of problems, and then we just led into a, you know, Xerox can help you do this. And there were 3 bullet points in there that all, one of them always had sort of a case study where we would say, here are the 3 kinds of things we can do to help you solve these problems. And here's a link, again, it's, you know, or you know, here's something that you should go check out, a website to help you learn more about that. And then the letter closed to say, I'd like to invite you to have a conversation with us about this and to tell us more about the kinds of issues that you're facing. And I'm going to ask my team to give you a call shortly and follow up. So the letters we wrote, you know, a simple 1-page document, executive signature, we sent out through Federal Express because we wanted to know that they would get there on an exact date and be delivered to the exact people that we were targeting. And on the day after that we knew the FedEx letters were delivered, we had the salespeople give a phone call. And they made the first contact, and, you know, there was a script, and it reiterated some of the other points, and, you know, tried to get through to the person. And then we followed up with an email. And in the process, when the salespeople made their first phone calls, they also then went into Salesforce.com and dispositioned how those phone calls went. Did they get through? And if they did, you know, did they get an opportunity to talk? And do they not want then the rest of the email sent because they got a live fish on the hook, so to speak? If they didn't, they would disposition it a different way, and then we would send out the second wave of emails. The second wave of emails focused on customer stories, and again, there was a phone call after that, and then a third wave of email that basically said, was more of the hard sell that said, you know, I'd really like to set up some time and bring us in and show you what we can do. And then another phone call, and then finally the third email, which was the closer, which was, you know, I hope I've given you some good things to think about. If you find that, you know, this isn't the right time, that's great, but please keep us in mind, and I'll check back with you in the future.
Excellent. And what I like about this is, again, you know, when it comes to demand generation, it doesn't have to be about a cast of thousands. You don't have to send over thousands and thousands and thousands of leads. It's really about quality. And if you go back and take a look at this case study that you're sharing with us, it's about quality, which started with the right list. And
right.
So I love this story. So keep telling us what happened next.
Okay, so kind of some in terms of the results. So the campaign was very well received, and both times the campaigns kind of ended up with the same sorts of results. So if you start out with sort of this pool of 400 to 500 contacts, by making the phone calls and whittling things down, by the time we're doing the third email, we're kind of down to about half of those that we still haven't, like, made a connection with. The first half we've made a connection with, and we sort of dispositioned them. And in terms of the whole process, when we looked at the completion, you know, we were in the neighborhood of having, you know, established somewhere between a dozen and 15 appointments, actual face-to-face appointments with the different reps who were involved. Now, again, the number of reps that we're talking about vary between 30 and 50 in terms of who was involved in the two different programs. I think the callback part was a really important part and was, to be frank, a part that some of the reps struggled with. In our fall campaign, we had about a fifth, so 20%, of our reps managed to get 100% call completion rate, which was fabulous. But you could see that there was sort of after the first letter, there was a big push, and then after the first email, things kind of trickled off a little until it was the last call, and then they all sort of pushed again. However, through the 14 appointments, what we were able to find is that, you know, we ended up being able to add about $50 million worth of total contract value opportunity to the pipeline for each campaign that we did.
I think that's amazing.
And here's the thing. What did we, other than our, you know, blood, sweat, and tears and labor and stuff like that, we spent between $10,000 and $20,000 on each campaign. And that was primarily for list development costs and for the FedEx, you know, email distribution costs. Or, I'm sorry, physical mail distribution costs.
I would say that's a pretty darn good example of how you get a very high ROI. And I think that, again, what a great example of, regardless of the size company you are, of beginning with being very, very targeted, of creating a program, you know, with marketing ops, and also sales ops, and also, you know, salespeople too, and then delivering on the value in that. I mean, when's the last time somebody spent, you know, $20,000 to $40,000 and got $50 million of opportunity?
Right.
I'd say that's just a fabulous return. So let me ask you this, Laura, and I've already heard one lesson learned that you talked about, and that is that the callback part's very important.
Yes.
What are the lessons learned in this that you would share with a revenue marketer?
So, you know, Debbie, my background prior to Xerox, is, as you mentioned, was at Forrester, where I started up and ran their business-to-business marketing practice. And one of the key things that I focused on there was this whole marketing automation, you know, demand management process. And the biggest lesson for me was, you know, I always thought, you've got to really sort of, you know, to be successful, you've got to really take this on and, you know, design in, you know, these very important, widespread, lengthy demand generation and nurturing programs with a lot of sophistication so that you're always delivering a constant swell of well-qualified, marketing-qualified leads to the sales organization. And if you, you know, have those, that kind of experience or that kind of ideas, that's very ambitious. And in particular, very large companies like Xerox have a long tradition of being sales-led. And the sales organization reigns supreme. And from that standpoint, if you're not bought into, or if the sales organization is not bought into the fact that marketing can help them generate demand, the best plans for how you put together marketing automation and programs and trying to generate leads will just, so to speak, fall on deaf ears. So the big lesson for me is you had to get sales to lead. You had to get sales to, if not believe, then, you know, feel like that the whole idea was theirs and that they needed to be, quote-unquote, in charge of the process. And taking that second seat was kind of a tough thing to do.
Mm-hmm. So I think part of that also is that there had to be a driving need from sales, because if you go out and approach a sales organization that's meeting quota, you know, and there's no burning need to do something different.
No burning need. They're going to be like, why do I need this?
Yeah, you have brand new people, and you were doing the hardest thing you could possibly do, and that's going out and getting net new logos. So there was a burning need to work with marketing on this.
Yes.
Okay.
Alrighty, and I think so the other big lesson was you don't have to be horribly sophisticated in what you do.
Yeah.
You know, this was letters and phone calls and email. And I think where we were really tight was on the cadence in terms of how we did things. I mean, internally, after every, you know, we had certain dates scheduled where this is where you would make your phone call. And then the day after, we would have sales meetings in the different regions for half an hour just to get everybody on the phone and ask the question, so how did it go?
Love that.
And you could tell by the second set of phone calls that they were all getting very excited about it, and they were starting to share stories about, well, I got a hold of this person, and I got a hold of this person, and I got a meeting next week. And when that kind of enthusiasm, when they started to hear that amongst themselves, then you know, the other ones started to, like, want to jump in and want to, like, be more aggressive about making their phone calls and taking advantage of the program.
I absolutely love that. We've just started. So interesting that you're sharing that story. We're doing something similar. We just started. I mean, like within like 10 days ago, and we have a similar kind of cadence. But what we're doing, exact same kind of things that you're doing. You know, all the segmentation, very very small list of like 50 companies. But what we're doing, Laura, is in addition to the letter, we're actually sending the executive a hammer. Just a regular hammer from a hardware store.
Dimensional mail, yes.
Dimensional mail. And basically what we're saying in the hammer is, you know, the notion is let's build something together. And if you take a meeting with us, we'll donate $250 to Habitat for Humanity.
No, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and we had our, we put our name on the hammer. So we just did a very small test mail of 10 because, again, it takes a while to do this. And we already have two substantial appointments set up. I mean, it's a wow.
And that's why I think that physical mail, whether you're just sending, see, the FedEx letter was kind of our hammer.
Yep.
It was something that we knew would show up
and that
somebody would pay attention to because it's sort of out of the regular realm of junk mail you get at the office.
Now, we added a dimension to that because, again, we had the hammer and then we had the emails, right?
Right.
So the dimension that we've added to it is that we took a look at all the contacts within the company, and so there's now a whole cadence of emails going out to all the contacts in the company,
mm-hmm.
not just to the senior executive in the company. So I will let everybody know how this campaign turns out, but I was tickled to hear that you were doing something very similar and that you guys had a great result with that. So, okay, so those are lessons learned. You've got to get sales to lead. Sales really has to have a burning need to want to participate this heavily, and that you don't have to be horribly sophisticated, you know, to get something up and running and to have an impact. But I think the other lesson learned is the time and attention around segmenting and messaging mm-hmm. to the right people with the right message.
Correct.
So those are some of the lessons learned. So I want to hear about one of the things that people ask me a lot about when it comes to demand generation, Laura, is content. So, you know, tell me about what you guys did around content to help the campaign, and did you have challenges in creating content?
Absolutely. I think content is probably one of the hardest things that revenue marketers face in terms of the different challenges around strategy, process, people, and technology. Fortunately for Xerox, we have content that I think is very interesting and very valuable in the forms of case studies, of customer success stories, and actually, you know, fully published ones that we have up on our website that we can refer to quite easily electronically. And these case studies tell customer stories in terms of what were the problems that they were trying to solve, how was Xerox a good partner in helping them solve it, and then what were some of the specific results that came out of it. And so for each one of these, and many of our case studies are industry specific. So what we did in terms of content was basically, I mean, these were short letters, short email. It was basically saying, we understand your problem. Here's some case studies that show we've solved these problems for other people like you. Give us the opportunity to talk to you more. so in in terms of content, all of the letters sort of follow the very same format, and the emails follow the very same format. We just changed them slightly to fit the specifics of the industry.
So you guys really had a good set of case studies that really worked very nicely within the campaign.
Yeah, I don't want to oversell it. There were a couple of industries, like the retail industry, where we really struggled to have a client case study that we could use there. I think the other part of the content that was difficult to struggle with is that once you got the sales rep, got somebody on the line, the phone call, then how did they prepare, you know, for that particular meeting, and what content could they bring to bear on that particular meeting? And I think that I want to go back to sort of the account targeting that we did and segmentation that we did at the beginning, because as part of that process, we then knew, well, here were the, you know, 400, 500 contacts, and these were the accounts that they represented, that when a rep got an appointment, they then came back to marketing operations and said, here's the one that we've contacted, we've got a meeting to go in with them. What can you provide us, marketing operations, so that we understand more about what's happening in their company? And so we have a lot of data sources that we subscribe to, things like, you know, Hoover's and First Research and iProfile and a bunch of these other sort of one source that talk about what's going on inside of these companies. They're kind of like clipping services on steroids. And so our marketing operations team, then knowing which these accounts were, could rapidly pull that information together, build an account profile, give it back to the rep so they could, like, study up and prepare how they were going to approach that particular account when they got into that when they got to the meeting, so to speak.
So, Laura, let me ask you this. So when you guys were creating the overall campaign, and let's say, you know, the first part is the rep follows up on the letter, and they also follow up at certain times behind the email. Did you give additional content pieces to the rep to use as additional ammunition as they were working with that prospect?
That would have been a wonderful thing to do, but no, we didn't. It was basically just a call script, but they all had access to the same case studies. What we did is we put together an online portal, so to speak, shared whatever, you know, like a SharePoint. We call them collections here at Xerox. And all of the reps had access to that. And inside of that, we would put things like slide presentations for those specific industries that talked about those industries' issues and how Xerox can help. We put copies of all the letters and copies of all the emails, copies of the case studies, plus internal slide presentations that walked them through the whole process of what the campaign looked like, which things went where in the process, and gave them references to other resources that they could use as well.
That is so interesting, and what a smart thing to do. I mean, you're really completely arming the salesperson to be successful on the campaign that you're driving. I love that idea.
I think the other key thing that we did is before the campaign actually started, we had a training session, and we kind of walked them all through this as well in terms of why are we doing this? What is the offering? How do we position it? How do we position it to this industry? And, you know, how do you follow up?
Love that. This is such a great example of sales and marketing working together to make a revenue impact. I love it. So I know that one of the things that you said, Laura, is that at Xerox, sales is king. And so when you and your team began working with this group at the beginning of the project, how do you think, or did it change, did sales perspective of your group and the role of marketing change from the very beginning of the project to the end of the project? And if so, how?
I think we moved the ball forward in helping them to understand that when you get marketing involved, it really helps to scale what sales can do. The whole concept of these kinds of campaigns actually started in the sales operations side of this particular group when they were a much smaller group, when they were, you know, under 30 people. And what they had is in a couple of regions, they were broken up into like five regions, and like one or two of those regions, the guys who ran those regions started these kinds of email, what we call veto, like a very important top officer, veto letter campaign. And they had some independent success with that. But what they weren't able to do by using sort of the overall messaging and the packaging and the account analysis and the automation that marketing brought was to scale that across an organization of 80 people, of which 50 or so were new.
So, Laura, were you guys also providing any digital body language insight to the sales team as this campaign was going on?
I wish I could say that we do, and for a number of reasons, mainly related to really some significant issues that we need to manage in terms of brand on the Xerox.com site, because the brand is very important to our company. The organization called Interbrand recently sort of did a brand study, and they came back and told us that the Xerox name, in terms of, you know, goodwill and market capitalization or whatever, is worth about $6.5 billion to Xerox.
Wow. That's
and so
amazing.
when you have a brand like that, and let's face, this is one of the only brands, and I say it's two, but it could be a couple of others that also fit into that, where the brand is a verb. You know, and it's like, can you go Xerox that for me? And the other example I use is, you know, go Google that. What does that mean? I don't know. Go Google that. And so when you have that kind of brand recognition and value, you have to be very, very careful about how you use that on your Xerox.com site. So we don't have a lot of flexibility on Xerox.com to be able to look at digital body language and connect things together on a moment's notice and do those kinds of things. I also think that that's extremely hard for a company that is, you know, $22, $23 billion operating in 170 countries or whatever the number is with 135,000 people. The demands on Xerox.com are phenomenal. And so from that standpoint, you can't give everybody in marketing the opportunity to have free rein on how they change and look at the digital body language, you know, to do things to Xerox.com that allow you to look at the digital body language in the way that we need to. So that just wasn't an option for us this time around.
This is a really good time to transition to a larger topic, and that is, you know, you had mentioned that when you were, you know, one of the VPs and heading up the B2B marketing practice at Forrester, that you had one perception of kind of marketing automation and how it happens and how it should happen, and then when you got into a big brand, you know, that perception changed. And I think that if we go out and we take a look at a lot of the literature and a lot that's being written about marketing automation and how it's a technology that helps a company marketing connect to revenue, I think a lot of that really is written about smaller companies. Because these smaller companies, you know, there must be 6,000-7,000 companies now using some of these sophisticated marketing automation tools, but it's the smaller companies who are more agile. So I would love to hear your perspective around, you know, when you're a large company, when you're an enterprise company, what is the role of marketing automation, and how does that eventually help transform marketing in the enterprise?
I think that's a great question, Debbie, and there's so many different ways to try to answer it. But I think for me, the thing that I've learned is that marketing automation is an evolution. And I'll go back to my analogy at the very beginning. It's a journey of 1,000 miles, and you take it step by step. And so what I see in terms of what we've been able to achieve and what other large companies, because there are other large companies using marketing automation, is that the successes are gradual. They happen in pockets and places inside the company. And when you start to see that there's, you know, enough successes happening here and there, then being able to bring those elements together and start to create communities of practice that eventually evolve into centers of excellence around, you know, demand generation, global demand generation, is a painstaking process. And it helps when the sales organization has a dire need, as we talked about, or has an urgent need to make an impact on the pipeline or to move the needle on revenue in a certain way. And if you don't find those pockets of need and focus on those, the journey to revenue marketing in larger organizations can take a lot longer.
Or may not happen at all.
And it may not happen at all.
Absolutely. So I really like the way you kind of pictured this, because again, I think a lot of people, when they think about marketing automation, you know, bing, bang, boom, you get the technology in, you know, magic happens. And that's just not true, especially in the large company, because there's so many elements that have to change within that. So I really like your observations around successes are gradual, and when you get enough success, and you kind of bring elements together, you create communities of practice, you begin to create those centers of excellence. Mm-hmm. But again, if not driven by some pain in sales, it's never going to be much more than a glorified email system.
Right.
It's just not going to happen.
And Debbie, remember that the issues around marketing automation are really around people and process. And all of those things are hugely magnified in a multi-billion dollar business. You know, we have sales organizational structures that are matrixed, right? We cross different geographies and product lines and industries. And in those kinds of complicated sales arrangements, even within your own organization, there's incredible focus on account management, on how we approach customers in a one-to-one fashion. And I think it's harder for them to see sometimes that clients are getting information from places outside of Xerox about Xerox, and that digital avenues have become very important channels for receiving that information, and that what your presence is on the website and your messages in terms of what you can deliver through the sales organization, getting those two things on the same page really takes a lot of effort, due because of the sheer size and the complexity of a multi-billion dollar company as opposed to one that's, you know, in the several millions or even hundreds of millions in terms of size.
Completely agree. And you're right, these issues of people in process, I completely agree, Laura. They're hugely magnified in these really, really big companies. So let me share with you, because you told me something earlier in the interview, so let me share another perspective with you.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that you said was, you know, the idea for this initial campaign actually came from sales operations. They were doing some very small amount of veto letters in the field, right? And they had some success with that, okay? I recently had a conversation with one of my colleagues, and he said, you know what I see? He said, I see that once sales really gets that marketing and the use of marketing automation can not only be scalable but also make a completely different level of impact on sales, I actually see sales wanting to take over marketing so they can run that revenue impact themselves. What do you think about that?
You know, I think there's lots of different areas in marketing, and, you know, I think that sales taking over sort of the field and demand generation at the local level sort of thing could make sense. I think there are other things, though, about brand and sort the corporate presence that needs to remain more centralized.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. Because you see, I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I've had a couple of folks that I know who are head of marketing call me and say, give me some advice on how to get my VP of sales, you know, out of my instance. You know, they're wanting to do things and drive things. So I just think this is so interesting. And you're right, it's not all of marketing, but this demand generation perspective. And let me ask you this, Laura, and again, these are kind of higher-level questions, but these are questions that you have so much experience in. I just would love to get you to share that perspective. I've been saying for 3 years now, 3 years in a row, this is probably the fourth year, but this is the year that sales is really going to get again, the promise of these marketing automation systems. I mean, that's really oversimplifying it. But as a salesperson, I can either have marketing, you know, nurturing leads for me and queuing things up for me exactly when the time is right, or I can be, you know, punching the telephone numbers, you know, on a cold call. What do you think it would take? What do you think it will take for sales to really get on board with this new way of selling?
I think, honestly, Debbie, I think we need a whole other generation of salespeople to kind of come through who've been more or less raised on marketing automation or just automation in general, like sales automation.
Yeah.
Because I see this not only at companies like Xerox, but other big companies in my experience at Forrester, that there are different profiles of sales. And there are some salespeople that still remain sort of your lone cowboy or whatever, right? They know how to bring in the money, and as long as they're doing what it is that they're doing, sales management is going to leave them alone. And there are other kinds of profiles, too, that very much sort of fit into the sophisticated revenue generation engine kind of model that we've been talking about. And until you get sort of that shift from the old school to the new school, where the new school says, no, this is how I'm used to doing it. If you want to hire me, you got to have the sales automation tools to support me. I think it's going to take longer than we've all continued to expect.
I love that story, and let me share something with you. It's so cool that you said that. It's another generation of salespeople. So I have a daughter who's graduating from college in, I think, May or June.
Congratulations, yes.
Thank you. Her undergraduate degree is in sales, and every person who graduates from this school in that program are highly recruited. In her interviews, she asked every VP of sales that she talks to, are you using marketing automation? And if they're not, she is not interested in talking to them.
That's amazing. And that is what I mean. We need that next generation.
We do. We need that next generation.
And I think it goes beyond the salespeople, too, into sort of the sales management. The sales management needs to be run and to understand how marketing can help them scale their teams ahead of, you know, the revenue curve, right, so that you don't have to grow the heads in sales at the rate that you want to grow revenue.
I agree. I think it's more probably of a sales management issue than even of a salesperson issue, but I could not agree more. Well, we have a few minutes left, Laura, and so this has been such an insightful interview. So many great pearls of wisdom that any revenue marketer can take
away.
Debbie,
you're too kind. I'm glad to have joined you today.
Absolutely true. But do you have any last thoughts? Any last words of wisdom? I mean, if you were to meet, let's say you met somebody at Mocha yesterday, and maybe they were just beginning this revenue marketing journey. What words of wisdom would you give them?
I would say embrace. What would you embrace your? Which side's the creative side now? I forget off the top of my head. Embrace your left brain. So embrace the analytical side is what I'm trying to say. Right brain is creative. Left brain is analytical. Embrace your left brain.
Yeah.
Because I think that right now what I'm sort of seeing is that the role of the chief marketing officer, the topmost ranks in the profession, are really kind of divided between sort of the traditional brand PR advertising oriented creative mindset and the newer mindset that is more analytical and business driven. And the more you can lean to being business driven and demonstrating how marketing impacts the business, the more success you'll have in your career.
Completely agree with that. You know, marketing is no longer the make it pretty department. It has
Correct.
To be the help get some revenue in the door department. So
that's right.
Anyway. Well, Laura, it's been delightful. Really enjoyed our conversation. I hope all our listeners enjoyed it. If you're listening live, you can also download this episode from iTunes. And we have a very exciting guest next time. I can't quite announce it yet, but there'll be something out on Twitter, in LinkedIn, and also in email, and also on our website in the next few days. So, Laura, thank you so much for joining us today.
My absolute pleasure, Debbie. Thank you for having me.